Some are a little more bashful, so we'll be patient. And that's all right. So here we have that text. Marge, you're already doing this. That text that when you read it, I don't know about you, I go, what? What am I supposed to do with this? And like I shared this with Carrie earlier, I got to get smarter. Because for 15 years working with Rick, I don't think he ever got this text. And it's ironic that you're sitting up there this morning and I'm down here. Somehow I got to figure this out. This is a difficult text, friends. It's really hard. And without fail, every commentary that I went to and every commentator that I listened to said a very similar thing. This text stinks. It's just hard. How do I make sense of it? And because often in parables, our natural tendency is to try to place in it, okay, which character in this parable is the God character? And which one might I relate to? And in this parable, if you do that, you'll be messed up. It won't be nice and clean and, that's clear, that must be God. Oh, that's clear, that must be us. It's just not like that in this text. It's difficult. So sometimes I've been taught to, if things are confusing, Michael, go to something that is at least somewhat clear to you in the text. So I went looking for what might be somewhat clear in this text. And the place where I landed was on the verse 13 of this text, where Jesus says, you can't serve both God and the bank in this translation or in other translations, wealth. You can't serve both God and wealth. Now, that by itself can be kind of wishy-washy in some things, but that's the clearest thing I got. So that's where I'm going to start. You can't serve both God and wealth. Let's start first by saying, Jesus does not say wealth is bad. It's serving wealth. All that we do is serving to try to accumulate and get more and more wealth. That's what Jesus is pointing to, the serving of wealth. When we get up, this is what I'm here to do. I'm here to try to put more and more money in the bank account. That's my whole goal. That's my whole focus. That's my motivation, is serving wealth. In particular, my wealth. And Jesus is saying you can't serve that wealth and God. So, since this is one of those texts, I started going back to things that you won't necessarily find in the text itself, but trying to learn what was the context that Jesus was sharing this parable in. What was going on in the world at that time? What would be known and understood for those that were listening to Jesus share this parable? And I think it's helpful for us to be reminded that this parable comes in a long stretch of similar things, that same setting that starts with people claiming and asking Jesus, you eat with sinners and tax collectors. What's up with that? And then Jesus goes on to tell the story about who you should invite to your dinner party. And it's not the ones that can rub your back for you. It's the ones that can do nothing for you, that you can get nothing back from. Those are the ones you should be inviting to your dinner parties. And then Jesus goes on and talks about these parables about the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost son, the prodigal son. And this. So that's a little bit of the context of which, as literature goes, of where this fits. Now, what was going on in Jesus' time, in that place where Jesus found himself, that might give us an idea of something to hang on to in this text? So let's take a look at the context. Where Jesus was, and when Jesus walked the earth, there were wealthy people who lived quite often in the southern part of Galilee, in that area of the world. And they were wealthy, and they owned land that was up in the northern part of the area. So the landowners, the wealthy ones, would lend out their land up in the north to tenants that would take care of the land, and were quite often, if not always, very poor in trying to get by. They were poor and they were trying to work the land so they could feed their families. And the landowners would charge those that were taking care of the land and farming the land fees to work their own land, which is interesting. So they would charge people parts of their crops. So for instance, they might come up to, Megan, you want to farm some of this land? This is what the fee is going to be. You have to pay me a good portion of your crop when that time comes in, and it needs to be this. It needs to be 100 bottles of, or 100 jugs of olive oil. Okay? Yours might be wheat. I need 100 bags of wheat from you. Yeah, exactly. 100 bags of wheat. And so this is what happened. And friends, it was a lot. It was a lot. It was quite clear that the landowners, their whole purpose for being a landowner was to build as much wealth as they possibly could. And so they charged a lot. A lot. They were getting very, very wealthy off the backs of the poor. Glad that doesn't happen anymore. But that's what happened then, and yes, it does happen now. So we have this landowner lending out his land, and in return, the people had to give a big portion of their crop back to the landowner as they tried to build something up so they could live, just eat. And it was interesting, those that were the wealthy ones got to choose which crops were more valuable than other crops. For instance, the olive oil, that would be a good cash crop. So you were motivated to provide olive oil because that was the most expensive thing that you could sell. But you can't eat olive oil only to eat, to survive. Wheat, maybe, but olive oil would be much more valuable for the money part. So those that were wealthy and were the landowners also got to choose which crops were the most valuable ones, and they weren't necessarily the ones that people could live off of. So this is the situation that we have. Now let's introduce the manager. The manager is kind of the in-between. The manager was in between the landowner and those that were farming the crops, farming the land, okay, the poor. So the manager, his allegiance is to the landowner. His job was to be able to bring in that which was owed to the landowner from those that were farming, those that were leasing the land, okay? That was their job. And so the manager would get these fees, these crops, and give them back to the owner. But see, guess what the manager was doing? He wanted to make money too, right? So what do you think he was doing to that which was agreed upon? Okay, if you are supposed to pay the landowner, let's say 80 jugs of olive oil, this manager would add some to it so that he would pocket that as the manager, then the owner got what was agreed upon. And he did this throughout. He added, the manager added a little bit more so he could pocket that and then give the landowner what was due to the landowner. Well, guess what happens? The landowner found out that, wait a minute, you're collecting a whole lot more than what I asked for, and I'm not seeing anything from this. You're fired. I should have been getting all of that. You're fired, and I want an accounting of all that you've done. Okay? So the manager's going, oh no, what am I going to do? I just got fired. And I can't do a labor job. I don't have the physical ability to do a labor job. And I'm too proud to beg. So he comes up with a plan. And his plan is he goes to all those that are leasing the land and sitting down with them and asking, what is the bill that you have? And they might say, well, I owe 100 jars of olive oil. Well, sit down, make it 50. And another one, I owe 100 bags of wheat. All right, sit down, make it 80. And then, because the manager's going, because as long as I can make good with the people that are those that are leasing the land, I'll have a place that I can at least find myself going back to and asking for help. So I'm going to build a relationship with those that I've been abusing, hoping that they'll welcome me into their homes. So, here's the thing. The landowner finds out that this is what his plan was, and then the landowner goes, nice work. What? Nice work, he says. What do you mean this is good work? As the reader of this story, he was crooked. Are you telling me, hey, way to be crooked? Because that doesn't sound like God. As I try to put God in here somewhere, that doesn't sound like God at all. But he says, nice job. You were street smart. You were street smart. You knew that you were going to need to rely on these people, so you built relations. That's being smart. That's being shrewd. That's having wisdom in what the system that you have, and you did it, and you did it well. Nice job. Because see, you know what he was doing, this manager? As he was cutting the bills, he was basically taking out his own profit that he was expecting. He was taking that part out of the bill and only off saying, this is what you owe. The 50 the jars of olive oil, that's what was agreed upon with the landowner. The 100, the extra 50, he was going to pocket. But he's saying, nope, not going to do that anymore. That's not right. So he cuts all the bills back to what the original understanding was going to be. So how do you feel if I cut your bill like that? That's pretty good, right? Maybe I could come over to your guys' house and have dinner or something like that. You could take care of me. Or over here, if I cut your wheat bill, will you allow me to maybe show up and maybe I could eat a little bit? Well, yeah. That's what your hope is. So I sit here and go, so what am I supposed to do with this? What's the gospel? What's the good news in all of this? And I have to tell you, I struggled with this. I struggled mightily with this. And then I thought of a story. How many of you have heard of the gentleman Oskar Schindler? Oskar Schindler, movie called Schindler's List. Oskar Schindler was a German. He was Nazi. And he lived during World War II, and he was a businessman, and he was a very shrewd businessman. He was a very wise businessman. He knew how to make money, and he made a lot of it. And he saw an opportunity to make a lot of money during this war. And he was going to employ Jewish people. This would be cheap labor, right? Which meant the profits are even more for me. Now, the story goes on, but I want to suggest that Oskar Schindler's motivation at the beginning of this story was wealth. As much wealth as he could accomplish at one time. That was his whole goal, was to build up his wealth. And he did it very, very well at the beginning of the story. And so he did very well at this. And then something changes. So he was worshiping this wealth and the accumulation of wealth. But something changes during his experience as he watches what is happening to the Jewish people. And he's learning where they were being sent to concentration camps to be exterminated. And as he learned this, he wrestled with the reality, I'm making a lot of money off of these people, and yet at the same time, I struggle mightily with, they are being sent to extermination camps. And his allegiance starts to shift away from building up wealth for himself to caring for those that were being sent out to concentration camps and extermination. His allegiance changed from his own wealth to, I'll say, God. I don't know if Oskar Schindler would ever say that, but the idea of seeing the other and their need became his priority. Something shifted. Now, this system was messed up. It was not pure. It was not clean. And so, as time went along, and as he saw that these people were the Jewish people that he employed very cheaply and helped him build up a lot of wealth, he sees that the way they are being treated beyond the walls of his workplace, he couldn't justify that. So he starts to take this wealth that he built up to preserve the lives of those that were working. He would go to people that were shipping them off and say, hey, let me offer you this, and maybe they could stay. And Oskar Schindler died penniless. He gave all his money away trying to save Jewish lives. Now, I don't know, and I'm quite positive that his allegiance changed. It was at first very much about building wealth, and then something, as he built relationships with those that were being treated so poorly and beyond imagination, his allegiance changed to them. And it's hard. So I get back to, how do I put all this together? Well, I'm going to go back to those words that seem to be somewhat clear to me. You can't serve both God and wealth. You can't serve both God and wealth. And I wrestle with that. And it's hard because there's a part of me that says, yes, you can. But the reality is you can't. I don't think Jesus would tell us this if he was just joking. It's true. We can't serve both God and wealth. And so then I start to ponder, you know, there are some businesses that I choose not to do business with based on what I've learned, how they might interact in different social things and values that I have and they seem to go against some of the values that I have. And so I choose not to do business with them. And then I start thinking, well, wait a minute. Somebody might work there that needs to work there, and if they didn't work there, they would be very hungry and or homeless. So now what do I do with this? And it's messy. So I go back to that statement, you can't serve both God and wealth. So I think there's good news in here. And this is where I'm finding it. Like Oscar Schindler, in the midst of a really messed up system, we have a choice before us. To serve God or something else. And it may not be clean. It may not be completely clear. If I just do this, then I know I'm serving God. Well, then what about this, and this? And maybe the opportunity is to be transformed. Maybe the good news is, like Oscar, my allegiance can change. It can change from my own well-being to that of somebody who is in need. You're sharing with us today about refugees and asylees and migrants. I was pondering, sometimes the system isn't as clean as what we would like it to be. And you gave us great definitions of what a refugee is. And yet, then we got this, and what about this, and what about that? Which are great questions, and it leaves us going, ah! And I had a colleague say, you know, maybe when we have a text that makes us wrestle and just feel super uncomfortable, that's exactly where you're supposed to stay for a while. I didn't like those words then. I don't like them now, but I think they're true. I think they're true. This parable is messy. I want to make it clean. If I just do this, then I'll be on the right side of everything. But we don't have a system like that. But we do have opportunities to ask the question, when I make this decision, will it reflect that I'm serving God or something else? Because it can't be both. So sisters and brothers in Christ, that's the choice before us, always. And it may make us feel uncomfortable. You guys all know, I'd rather be up here and be able to give you a message that when you left, you go, ah, I feel good about myself. I'm going to be all right. I can't do that today because I'm in the midst of this. And I wrestle, and I feel super uncomfortable with all of this. And yet, here's those words. The only words that seem to be clear are the ones that convict me. And yet, there they are. And I have a feeling. I picture Jesus putting this in front of us. You can't serve both God and wealth. And I don't think those words come with a wagging finger in our face of condemnation. I think these words come with an invitation motivated by love, unconditional love, and an invitation to experience a life that is far more than what any accumulation of wealth I can gather on my own. So, sisters and brothers in Christ, we can't serve both God and wealth. With God's help, let's serve God. Amen.